Welcome to the Dean Blundell Show. My name is Dean, and it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you someone who everybody knows. I met him probably 20 years ago, and we met because he was running for mayor, and I didn't give him a chance, and the dude won, and we became friends, and now he's an activist. I guess you could call him an activist, a climate activist. He's written a new book called Solved. So congratulations, you've solved the climate crisis, according to David Miller, ladies and gentlemen. Good to see you.
Hello, thanks, Dean. I didn't say I've solved it.
Yeah.
It can be solved in cities. But thanks for having me on the show. We used to have a lot of fun on your old show, but those were different times. A little bit crazier.
Yeah, it was simpler time back then. No one had Blackberries. I remember meeting you for the first time. You came in with a couple of guys. I don't even think you had a cell phone. You were wearing your a beautiful gray suit, like a shark skin suit. And I'm like, well, this guy's good. And then you walked in, and I believe I had to apologize for calling you a communist the first time I met you, because I didn't think you're going to win the election. You won. And still to this day, and John Tory, God bless him, he's one of my favorite guys in the world, too. Just a shining example of how to run a city and how to do it with personality and how to do it with conviction. So great that you joined us. And nice to relive those memories of me calling you a communist, too. Sorry about that.
Well, thanks. And, you know, there was kind of a list of apologies there, but I accepted them all graciously over time.
You did. How are you? Have you done like the presidential thing where like a mayor leaves office and he completely doesn't get involved in politics? Because you've turned into this real serious voice for the hazards of climate change and where we are.
Well, I think you need to be statesmanlike when you leave office. I've spoken up about one or two issues. I spoke up about transit because I think it's so important. But by and large, you know, if I wanted to weigh in, I should have run again. I chose not to run again for a whole bunch of good reasons, the foremost of which was my kids were just going into high school and I'd never been home for dinner. And I always envisioned if I was a dad, I'd be a good one. And the starting point is showing up. So, and I'm with this organization called the C40 Climate Leadership Group. It's a group of global mayors, started at 40. It's now almost 100, working on climate change. It's rewarding. They're making a massive difference. That's why I wrote the book, because people, I think, you know, pre-COVID, people were extremely worried about climate. They're going to be worried again once we get through this. Polls show that people, you know, now expect governments to act to deal with urgent issues. There's a real expectation. And I don't think people know the story of what's happening in cities, because there's a lot happening that's real, that's making a big difference. And the thesis of the book is, if you take the best ideas that are happening somewhere and do them everywhere, we really can solve climate change, which I think is really good news. But because nobody knows, I thought I'd tell the stories.
Yeah, I read parts of your book, and it's actually really good. It's enlightening because you give backstories as to, the climate crisis and how, you know, civically, municipally, we have an opportunity to be able to make a difference in individual cities, and how you went to different cities to be able to look at what different cities were doing that were successful. Why is it that you focused on the civic perspective, the municipal perspective, as opposed to the federal or provincial perspective? I found that really, really interesting.
Well, first of all, because the federal governments globally have been shamefully absent from action. They talk a lot. Very good talkers, but haven't really acted. Secondly, there's kind of a fundamental thing here. About 10 years ago, give or take, the world moved from being a world in which, since the dawn of human civilization, most people lived outside cities in rural areas, to a world where most people live in cities. So, and that trend's accelerating because of China and India, and, you know, what's happening in Africa and Latin America. So where the world is now an urban world, it's where most of the emissions are, about 70%, according to our figures, and most of the economy is. So, you know, if you're going to attack a problem, you start where it is. Mm-hmm. And it's in cities, the people are in cities, And most greenhouse gas emissions come from how we heat and cool buildings, how we generate electricity, how we use transportation, and how we manage our waste. Not all, but most. And all of those, there are things that you can do that make the city a better place for people to live, make it more economically successful, and also happen to really deal with greenhouse gas emissions. So that's why cities, it's because where people are, where the emissions are, and where the solutions are.
Yeah, and you know, you said it off the top too, federal, provincial governments probably love talking about doing stuff when it comes to election time. They love talking about the things that they can do for you. They don't essentially love doing it because of the hand of big business. It's really part of this issue, right? And it's one of the things that over the past few years that I have not softened on. I don't know if you could have ever called me a conservative with a hard C, because I didn't really take the time to understand what that meant. And over time, you know, the perspective of science and fact in my life has become so much more important than conjecture or anything my parents taught me, or you know, the narrative that economically climate change is a joke or it's a hoax. What do you say to people like me that were like me, that haven't taken time to sit and go, and you're laughing, like, what do I say to someone that was like you? Shut the fuck up. That's what I say.
I was just thinking when we talked about the diet I used to be on, which had no carbs after 4.
Yeah.
And you guys said, so you can't drink beer. And I said, well, only before 4. And so the next time I was on your show, you brought beer for breakfast. Which, you know, when you're the highest elected official in the city, is not how you should start your day.
Well, you know what, says only you. You know, the guy that came after you was totally cool with it. But
well,
I do. Yeah. But what is that? What do you say to someone who's just not willing? Because this is what I'm finding now with COVID. This is what I'm finding with the masks. This is what I'm finding with so many different issues that we have today. You're tackling something and you know, someone's going to say, oh, I can't believe you had that lefty on the show. And you know what, I'm sick and tired of the weaponization of extremes. But what do you say to somebody that is going, you know what, I'm not going to watch David Miller talk about climate change because it's not real?
Well, you know, I've come to the point, Dean, where I just say, don't watch me. You know, you got to mobilize the people who are with you and the people who are sitting on the fence. Mm-hmm. And on climate change, let's talk about COVID in a second, but on climate change, the vast majority of people understand the science. It's not, you know, it's not rocket science. And there's a reason. Houston has a climate plan. Houston is the world capital of the oil industry. They've got a climate plan. Why do they have a climate plan? Because over the past 5 years, in 3 of those years, they've had a storm that's supposed to happen once in 500 years. City infrastructure is only built to handle storms that happen about every 50 years or maybe 100. Mm-hmm. So when you have a storm that big, it destroys everything. Like, it has massive, hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars of damage. And, you know, people in Houston, for example, are saying, well, to the mayor, what are you going to do about this? You know, how are you going to help us? We've been flooded. You know, once you get flooded, you can't get home insurance again. Once you've been flooded, you can't get flood insurance again. You know, what are you going to do? And I would just, you know, if somebody is skeptical about the science, I'd just say, you know, look out the window. You know, last year, wildfires in Australia, wildfires in extreme all in California, biblical flooding in Jakarta. Just last week, they had the second hurricane in a row in Nicaragua. They used to think that was impossible. Couldn't happen. The physics didn't permit it. You know, something's going on. Something's going on.
You think so?
I think so. So, you know, like, wake up.
Yeah. It's tough. You know, there are segments, and this is why we're segmented, and I find this to be true. There are segments of the population that don't want climate change to be real. They don't want science as part of their day. I grew up in a born-again Christian evangelical family. And science was like, you know, fuck you, we don't listen to science in this house. And that was willfully taught. That was willfully taught in Sunday school and in church and all that other shit. Science is bogus. And, you know, the older I've gotten, the more I've realized the parts that, that our parents have played, the parts that economy's played, the parts that religion has played, in dumbing down people to the point where they want to reach for some kind of narrative so that they can stay engaged in cognitive dissonance. And it drives me nuts. It makes me crazy. And as I'm like you with the COVID thing, you know, with the COVID thing, it's a bizarre analysis of how people really are, who they really are. Like this guy at Adamson Barbecue. He wants to open up, opens up, doesn't believe in the mask mandate, doesn't think anything's going on because he's generated his news from Facebook. He's generated his news from memes, like the majority of the world. And I don't know how you combat naysayers, but I'm almost to the point where it doesn't matter. Like educating those people doesn't matter because I'm never going to control how they think or feel. And that's dangerous in a place like climate change or when it comes to a pandemic, is you've got an entire section of people in the middle, which makes up the vast majority of people who are looking for people to look out for the environment, promoting climate change, promoting the necessity of trying to do something good for this world by understanding and teaching and preaching where we are, technically with science, with slides and fucking graphs and colors and all that shit. But still people won't grasp it's like a choice that they make. And that's the part that I'm flummoxed by personally. Like it bothers me personally that I have settled on, I don't care. I don't care about teaching those people, but that's why I have guys like you on the podcast, because you do still care and you're writing books about it.
Well, you make a profound point, and part of it is I didn't study psychology. You know, I studied economics. I'm a lawyer professionally. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I spent most of my life involved with municipal politics after practicing law for nearly a decade. So, you know, I understand people very much, but not through an academic lens. But there's something like climate change is kind of overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And in a way, so is COVID. And there is something psychologically about that, you know, maybe in a way people don't really want to accept some because it's daunting. And maybe it's correlated with certain kinds of religious upbringing. I don't know. I was brought up an Anglican. I was an altar boy. You know, we had our own very formal, you know, church had incense and stuff, but we were brought up to respect science. You know, that's just how it was. I guess in the bigger picture, I think climate change, enough people care that we can move forward. COVID's a little trickier because, and by the way, I'm bit cynical about this. I think it's all a big stunt by this guy to get a lot of attention, and he's doing it. Got a
barbecue joint.
So, yeah, I'm not mentioning the name. I'm not giving any attention. It's no. Like, you know, this is how Trump used to behave, right? Do something outrageous just to get on the news. It's brilliant. Everybody's covering it.
Yeah, part of me gets that too. But I think he let it go too far. I think it was one of those stunts that it was probably planned as a PR stunt. And now that his barbecue Anon theories are coming out, like he's gone past the point of no return, and now it's going to destroy his business. He got hit with like 150,000 fines yesterday. He got locks changed by the government today. Like he can't open up the joint. Like it just drives me.
Well, it's also like he has opened a window into a pretty dark world there.
Yeah. You know? Oh yeah.
And you do have to worry about that. You know. Evil grows in the dark.
Oh, yes, sir. Evil grows right down in Etobicoke at the barbecue joint, actually.
How does it go? Evil grows in the dark. Green cracks and holes. And something, something. Evil grew in you. Yeah. Well, I've forgotten the exact.
No, I think the evil's in this guy. It's not you or me. We're good.
Cracks and holes. And lives in people's minds.
Yes.
Evil grew. anyway, the challenge with COVID is, if you don't behave responsibly, you're making somebody else sick. It's like taking a big sword and walking around the street, swinging it and saying, I have the right to do this. You don't have the right to make other people sick. You don't have it's a truism. When I studied law, you don't have the right to go in a crowded theater and yell fire, right? Because there might be a stampede, somebody gets hurt. You don't have the right to spew germs over people. And we need everybody to respect that. basic fact. And we're going to need everybody once vaccines come out to be participating with vaccines. And that's the challenge. You know, climate, I think we can get by with 80% of the people agreeing with it. In a pandemic, it's a bit more difficult because even a few people who are misbehaving can really create a problem. I was shocked that the U.S. Supreme Court said it's okay for churches to go ahead and hold services. I mean, if you hold a service and people sing, you're going to kill people. Mm-hmm. It's like saying it's okay to hold services or everybody pulls out their gun and shoots. Mm-hmm. It's really, you know, really dangerous. And that, you know, the person who's done it the best, I think, is the health minister of BC, Adrian Dix, and Dr. Bonnie Hendry, because they've had a beautiful combination of clarity and empathy, but also respecting the fact that people got to come along at their own pace. So they've kind of set standards and been a bit less heavy-handed. It's a tricky thing to judge, but if you don't get everybody on side, you're in big trouble.
Talking to David Miller, former mayor of the city of Toronto. He's a lawyer, climate activist. His book is called Solved. And you can get it anywhere you get your fine books, absolutely follow him as well on Twitter. His Twitter handle is up on the screen there. You know, you talk about not just the climate change issue and trying to change people's minds and back into the COVID issue. The one thing that I can't stand is whining at this age. Whining is just a waste of my time. And you can steal my shit, just don't steal my time, because I can't get any more time back, David. That's how I feel. I've always felt that way. And when you get older, you feel that way more and more. So the whining that I see and the time it takes me to be able to go through the whining, to be able to ascertain whether or not the people that are whining have a valid opinion, drives me crazy. Case in point, everybody now leaning on, you talk about clarity. The lack of clarity with the approach as to who can open and who can close. Is that what you're talking about? Are you talking about the fact that there are different rules for Quebec as there are two different rules for Ontario? Is this a government thing? Is this a scientific thing? Should we be having clearer, mandates brought to us by health ministers in all parts of the country? Because to me, this is really, it's fixed easily with a federal decision or a federal mandate, but leaving all of these jurisdictions provincially and municipally up to their own, devices, that seems to be where the messaging gets all fucked up.
Well, I'm less worried about, you know, Quebec having a different approach than Ontario. Then the key thing for me is a real clarity of the communication. And it needs to be clear and the reasons why. And, you know, early on, the message was clean all the countertops and wash your hands, because every other pandemic had been spread by drops being on services and living. So right. Now it looks like it's airborne. Mm-hmm. There needs to be incredible clarity about that. Just real clarity. And I think, you know, some of that can come from Ottawa. I very much believe in the big cities, the local public health agencies, they're really good. And we've seen examples of clarity and simplicity and therefore efficacy. And Bonnie Hendry in BC, who used to work for Toronto, by the way, during SARS, mm-hmm. is probably been the best. Plus, she has great shoes. She wears a man. I don't know if you see him. She wears John Fluvog shoes.
Oh, she's like she's one of those. She's like one of those people that doesn't give a crap. So she just wears whatever she likes.
Yeah, yeah. So it's interesting, right? Because she's got this role that's very collective and serious, and you know, she's basically said, look, you know, respect people and care about them, but then she stalks out in these kind of wild. Yeah. If you ever seen Fluvog. So she's probably
listening to The Clash when she gets home tonight too.
Well, I don't know. She used to be in the Navy, so whatever naval officers would listen to. But I think that's the issue. And there has been some dissonance, you know, between what the federal health officer and the Ontario health officer say, and I think that's problematic. And unfortunately, the province said, oh, you know, we've got this whole new system. And then a week later, it was a complete failure. That was really not helpful.
Not fun. No, those are never helpful. And it's like dueling opinions. You know, depending on where you are and what you watch. David Miller, again, our guest, former city mayor of the city of Toronto. A book is called Solved. It's about climate change for all of you nuts that don't think is real. How much time do you think we have in Canada, North America, if nothing changes, if the commitment to, you know, not reducing greenhouse gases doesn't continue to be an issue for us, if the people, you know, that make decisions based on massive amounts of pollution in our environment and where we are, how much time do we have left? Because that seems to be what everybody kind of gathers around. Like, it's one kind of measuring stick that everybody understands. And not just time, like doomsday time, but until we've done really irreversible damage to this planet.
Not much. Not much. At most a decade. You know, the Arctic sea ice is already showing really bad signs. And that's really bad because if we don't have the Arctic sea ice, it's an early warning sign that the permafrost will start melting and huge amounts of methane will escape if that happens. So it's pretty worrying. I'd basically say, you know, we need to see by the end of this year in Glasgow, when national governments are all meeting about this and cities will be there too, really clear plans for a pretty dramatic action over the next 10 years. And from my perspective, and you know, good news is there's things happening in cities around making much more efficient buildings. Vancouver, you got to have net zero buildings by 2030. That's the kind of urgency we need. New York has mandated that existing buildings have to be way more efficient by 2030. China, Shenzhen, China has 16,000 electric buses and all their taxis are electric. There's no reason we can't do this everywhere. So technologically and economically feasible. We just need to see people saying, yep, this is urgent. We've got a path over the next 10 years to make dramatic change. And, you know, for me, you start with the cities because that's where things are already happening. And we can build on that. And maybe the things are a bit harder you can do later. But you can make a ton of change right now. And that's what needs to happen. Otherwise, we're in pretty big trouble. And, you know, maybe some parts of the world, the climate will get a bit better, but when tens, if not hundreds of millions of people are forced off their land because it becomes too arid for crops, and we have to, where are they going to go? There'll be internal migrations. There's internal migrations happening in the U.S. right now in Louisiana because of storms, and there'll be refugees between countries. Look at all, you know, all hell broke loose when people from Syria had to go somewhere else. What's going to happen when there's tens, if not hundreds of millions of people? That's a very real risk. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a risk of global stability and all sorts of stuff. So, mm-hmm. you know, my answer is today. We need to start today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I, you know what, and in little ways too, you know, people talk about recycling and, you know, not running their lawnmower, but just in little ways, we can all do our part by the things that we know work, by the things that we know are part of our system and our plan. Individually. And it's sort of like going back to the COVID thing, you know, it's about personal responsibility and education at this point, and willingly not educating yourself as to any significant issues that we're facing and your part in that just means you're a dick. That's pretty much it. Before I let you go, I do have to say this. You're welcome.
Can you remain entertaining? Everybody's going to say, why were you on that show? You remain entertaining, my friend.
You know, I, cause I asked, and that could just be your answer. Is it that we have a good relationship? No, it's important. Climate change is a fucking issue and I don't want people to not take it seriously, including the people that follow us and like us. And, but I do have to say this, Diego Maradona passed away yesterday at the age of 60. We had James Sharman on the show yesterday to talk about the life and times of Diego Maradona and the hand of God as a Brit. And then a few years ago, him going, yeah, I totally cheated. Eat it. We won. Doesn't matter. Also, we want the Falklands back. But what was Diego Maradona like to watch? Because you were a young man when in 1986, when they won the World Cup. What was it like? Were you just terrified of him as a young British soccer fan?
Mesmerized. You know, I go back far enough that I was celebrating in 1966 when England actually won the World Cup. Just before the Leafs lost won the Stanley Cup, some kind of, you know, some kind of history. He's mesmerizing. And I, you know, there's some videos going around. There's one I saw yesterday of him warming up to music. It is unbelievable. He was just mesmerizing. I mean, we were furious with the hand of God, but you just had to admire him. He was so brilliant. And there are very few athletes that have been so skilled. And I feel his fame was a burden. The entire world recognized him. There was nowhere he could go ever. It was a burden. Well, we've seen it in other great athletes, particularly great soccer players. George Best, a guy named Paul Gascoigne, was great for England. They all destroyed themselves with alcohol and, you know, Maradona with drugs. And I think that the burden of being this incredible, unique, brilliant, talented, world-renowned athlete was too much, particularly when he couldn't do it anymore. How do you have that gift and it goes? It's like dying, but you're still alive. You know, he gave us so much. I mean, from a supporter of the UK national team, it was bad. But as somebody who loves the game of soccer, you know, he's incredible. And I went to the Bombonera much later in his career. I happened to be in Buenos Aires. My friend's married to an Argentinian. I'm married to a Venezuelan. They both call the Falklands the Malvinas, by the way. I'll let them debate it. We went to the Bombonera, and it was crazy. And Maradona showed himself, and the place went nuts. Like, Boca Juniors is where he started, right? And there are, I don't know how many people fit in this stadium, 80,000, and they're chanting Maradona, Maradona, Maradona. I'm getting chills right now. And the place was crazy. When we walked up the ramps to get to our seats, which was the very top of the stadium, people were throwing bits of concrete they pulled off the stadium at the fans below because they thought they were on the opposing team, like chunks of concrete the size of my shoulders. Right? It was craziness. But then you get there, and there was such love for him, and they were just chanting his name, and I had chills up my spine. Now I'm getting it now. He was unique, brilliant, and it was a gift for all of us to watch him, even if he was a cheating bastard.
Do you remember where you were for the hand of God? Were you watching that live?
Yeah, I was in pretty sure I was in the Madison pub drinking soda water.
That wasn't soda water, bud. You're lying. And if you start lying now, no one's going to believe your climate change book, buddy.
Okay. I had a pint.
And do you remember, did you cry?
A joke. I thought Dean Blundell used to take jokes. Like, that was a joke.
It was a joke. Dude, I know you're joking, but I also know that you had your pints, and I know you love your pints, and I don't begrudge anybody that loves their pints. As a good British lad, you should love your pints. But I'm trying to draw out the emotional experience from the hand of God moment from you as a British national fan and as a British national.
Furious, right? Furious.
Did you know? Because there's no replay back then, right? You're like, oh, fuck, can we see it? Did they try and slow-mo it at the time?
No,
or were you like...
I thought we had a replay, but that's fuzzy. But there was no question. No, you can't. Like, the shortest guy in the pitch can't leap up higher than the goalkeeper, okay? Like, it's kind of obvious. It's not. He was a cheating little prick, but just brilliant, mesmerizing, and, you know, fabulous to watch.
Listen, dude, it is great of you to spend some time with me today, and really, really wonderful to see you, wonderful to catch up again. And I know I wax about your time as I was driving through Sackville the other day, seeing your handiwork. And you've really done an amazing job, and you did an amazing job in keeping this city going by the vision that you had. Not only that, you know, the education you gave me as a young man on how to treat people, specifically when you would come in and you would joke around with us, is something to aspire to if you're an individual. So young men and women, listen to this man. He knows what he's talking about. Solved is the name of his book. It's about the solving the world's climate crisis. One city at a time. David Miller, lawyer, activist, climatologist. Can I call you that? Are you a climatologist now?
No.
You're no. It's like when I call myself
guy,
an insider.
You can call me. Okay.
Climate guy. Climate guy. David Miller. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks so much. Appreciate being on. Okay. Cheers.
Thanks to our friend David Miller for joining us today. We appreciate it. And thanks to you for being part of this podcast as well. We appreciate it. We'll be back in just a second with Zoe. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Dean Blundell Show. My name is Dean. You've arrived at DeanBlundell.com or you're watching on at It's Dean Blundell on Periscope/Twitter or Twitch TV, Dean Blundell TV. YouTube. We just finished with David Miller. What a fucking great guy. City of Toronto came out and talked to us about climate change, climate hoaxers, climate deniers. Real quick breaking news, too, before we get started. They just arrested that that guy, Adam Skelly, from Adamson Barbecue. You know the barbecue joint, Sean? The barbecue joint that that was serving patrons indoors and caused a big scene for the last 3 days and changed the locks and, oh, the fucking pandemic. And the guy that was operating without a fucking business license, remember that guy, Sean? Remember him? Yeah, he's in jail. Anyway... the podcast today brought to you by our friends at Owner's Box Fantasy Sports. Right now, $500 bonus cash, bonus match, bonus money, free money, $500. If you go and sign up at Owner's Box, play some fantasy this weekend. A lot of football on today. Get in there now. You might as well do it. Owner's Box Fantasy Sports, weekly payouts, huge ones too. The official fantasy partner of DeanBlundell.com. Thanks to our friends at Blue Microphones, the official microphone of DeanBlundell.com as well, and Ed's Fine Imports. Gitch 3, your promo code, buy three, get one free, four pairs of Gitch for the price of three at edsfineimports.com. Last week, we were talking on the podcast about a fucking million things. And as luck would have it, someone was listening to it and said, hey, I got an answer for you. The answer was trans-related because we were talking about, we didn't understand how people could get, especially men transitioning to women, could maintain that they could menstruate, they could have their periods. I still don't understand that. But the fucking great part about this industry content is that it appeals to everyone. And we got a great email or a great Facebook message from our next guest who worked trans outreach for the Canadian Mental Health Association. Her name is Zoe. And she said, listen, I'll come on and explain some shit to you guys. No sweat. So please welcome to the program, Zoe Carey. Zoe, how are you today?
Oh, not too bad of yourself.
Good. Nice to see you. Good to have you here. You're on the phone because you're busy working. What was great is I learned that you're a trucker as well.
I sure am. Yeah, it's funny. Just as soon as we were about to start, they came out to me and said I was they were done loading me. So now I'm just getting ready to go here. But yeah, I drive truck for a living.
It's fucking awesome. How long have you been driving truck?
A couple months now. I drive, semis now, mm-hmm. but I've been driving school buses, things like that for a couple of years too. So,
mm-hmm. So this
the
was
grand
just
scheme of it all. What? Sorry, guys?
No, go ahead. Grand scheme of it all. You just decided to drive something bigger for more money.
Basically. Yeah. It was more job opportunities, things like that. Mm-hmm. And I own a fifth wheel as well. So I've been towing things basically since I was 10 years old. So.
You've been driving around with a fifth wheel since you were 10? Where'd you live?
No, just been towing things. No.
You're from fucking Keswick?
Towing the old... Oh, God, no. I'm from Port Hope, actually.
listen, dude. Zoe, thank you very, very much for joining us and being part of the podcast. And what was it that caught your attention? Because you were listening to the last podcast, and then you reach out to us. What made you do that?
Well, basically you just said you wanted more information on, trans rights just so you can, or just trans people in general, just to help you understand more. And right. I was just like, well, I'm a pretty open person. And, I heard you talking about that period thing. And I wanted to hear more of what you meant, what they maybe meant by that, because I'm telling you right now, I am a post-op trans woman. And there's definitely no period happening. I can definitely assert that.
That would sort of be the best part about, to me, if I was trans, it would be like, you know, the good news is I never have to menstruate.
Well, I did have to have my my penis turned inside out.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of give and take when it comes to it all.
Mm-hmm.
But if I were to be born, you know, female, I would take the, you know, take the menstruation thing out of it. But yeah, like hormones could give you like, you know, maybe like a sick feeling or, you know, an emotional feeling every month.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you don't get a period, even trans guys. So here, actually here, I'll tell you too, how the nomenclature works. If you don't know,
I'd love to know. That's why I asked you to come on, Zoe.
So I am a male to female trans woman. So I was born male or whatever, born with a penis. Mm-hmm. And I transitioned to female.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's the other side of it is obviously female to male.
Mm-hmm.
I know most of them. Now, mind you, there are going to be people out there who say, oh, that's wrong or whatever. I have it differently. But the majority of female to male trans people, when they start taking testosterone, they actually stop getting their period.
Mm.
So, they start growing little penises out of their clitoris and things like that, some of them. So,
some of them have it made too, right?
Oh, yeah. I always joke. I used to actually be in a band with a friend of mine. He was a trans guy, and I used to always joke how like we could go into a gig or whatever, and nobody would know that he was you know, a trans guy. And I'm just like, you bloody bastard! Like, you're so lucky that way. But at the end of the day, though, like, if he wants to have surgery to have, you know, the downstairs look the way he wants it,
yep,
it's a lot more involved than mine. Like, mine was like less than 2 hours, and I was out, you know, within a week and back to work within like a couple of months sort of deal.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But like them, it's like, you know, several surgeries, skin grafts, things like that. So
mm-hmm.
it's all give and take in the whole grand scheme of it all. So
you make major surgery sound like it's nothing. But but I think there's a reason for that, right? Zoe Carey joins us, trans woman who has transitioned from male to female, full post-op trans person. Tell me something. When did you, because you were married at one point, and we've actually spoken before. Remind me about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So when you were still with, can we name your old places? Okay. Yep, yeah.
Don't care.
I used to listen to you all the time on The Edge when I was working, you know, more locally. But I had actually called in for What's Wrong With You,
mm-hmm.
And I had won, because I did not have sex with my wife at the time for 2 years. So
mm-hmm.
You allowed me to go see Colorado, who was opened for by Fred Benner, which was a pretty awesome show. So
yeah, that's what we did. The contest was like to see who had the most fucked up life. And people would call in on a morning basis and they would say, here's what's wrong with me. And I remember you won because if I'm not mistaken, you didn't have sex with your wife who had some plumbing issues and there was a colostomy bag involved. Am I wrong?
Yeah, no, that really wasn't the issue. It was what led to that was, she had what was known as perianal fistulas, which basically meant poop went in between both holes, basically.
That's so right.
There was whole loads of different issues that came up. So for the longest time there, that was the issue. Then she had the surgery at around the 2 year mark.
Yeah.
And then we went another year and then stupid me with timing. Like, you know, we went that 3 years. We finally actually started being intimate again. Actually, we're trying for another child. And then I was just like, hey, guess what? I think I might be trans. And then that ended everything right then.
Threw a monkey wrench into the plans.
Pretty much, yeah. So basically, I have not, you know, been intimate with anybody for like 6 years. So,
well, let's we'll get to that in a bit if you want. But I want to talk about when you knew, like, you know, you're married, you had kids at the time, correct? And you're a man, and you decide not just one day. Obviously, this is a struggle. But for people who don't quite understand this life that you have. And this internal struggle that you went through, when did it start?
As long as I can remember. I could have, you know, if I grew up in the 80s and 90s, and if it was more, you know, talked about, maybe more open, more okay, I probably could have done it when I was a child, like when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But it was one of those things. I grew up, my dad killed himself when I was 7. And I found out later on in life that he had suffered from, it was depression related. Obviously, that's why you kill yourself. But so that when I finally found out about that in like my early 30s is when I started going to see, you know, somebody, and, you know, they're like, well, I think you might be trans. And I'm like, yeah, I think I've known that for a long time. I was just kind of hoping I wasn't. And but yeah, like it was one of those things. Like it's.
But why were you hoping you weren't? Like that's significant in this conversation to me. Why were you hoping you weren't trans?
Because even when I started my transition, it was like, it's still been night and day since then. It was less accepted. It was, you know, I came out just before Caitlyn Jenner came out. Like I, you know, it just, I knew that if I came out as trans, that would be the end of my marriage. You know, mm-hmm. And things would be a lot harder because it really is. Like I've been turned down for jobs. Like I went several years there without work because of the way I looked.
Because you were transgendered, because you were seemingly a man and you dressed like a woman. So people didn't want to give you work.
Basically. Yeah. Yeah. That's like I have a college diploma in like policing. I went to school to work at the border for customs.
Mm-hmm.
And couldn't get a job doing that. I couldn't even get a job in a local, not Port Hope, but a different town as a, not a cop, but what's the one underneath? I can never remember the name now.
Special constable?
It's been a few years. Yeah, special. I couldn't even get a job as a special constable, even though I had more training. You know, I did better than over 3/4 of the people on the beep test. They just like flat out, it was like, yeah, it sounded like I was going to get the job. And then they asked one of the captains, and then it was just all of a sudden, nope. And I'm like, oh, they didn't say the reasoning because, you know, they could get in a lot of trouble, but I'm pretty sure I know the reasoning behind it. And I've even been told by places after I've been hired. And if I said, but like, you know, I've gone in and let's make their own assumptions sort of thing about myself. Like I don't correct anybody and I've gotten the job. And afterwards they're like, yeah, if we would have known you were trans, because like would come out to them after the fact, we might not have hired you because of whatever reason. And I'm like, oh, good. But you know, it's one of those things when you're the first one that they have come through the door, then they don't know. And mm-hmm. maybe the next person that comes might, you know, be better off that way. So
you would show up to these job interviews dressed as a man and then come out as a woman later? Would you do that to get jobs?
I wouldn't say dressed as a man. I dress kind of in between. Mm-hmm. Like you look at me at the way my clothes, like I wear mostly female clothes, but like it's like long sleeve jeans. Like that's the way I've always been, is just a jeans and t-shirt sort of person.
Mm-hmm.
So like you look at me and it's just like, think like lesbian, like butch lesbian sort of deal.
Oh,
where it's
okay.
Like, ah, they can go either way sort of deal. Like, so that's kind of where I fall in. So like, yeah. I'm lucky in a way because I can like take advantage of that to where, you know, I still kind of have a little bit of white male privilege, but I understand the trans side of it too.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of. So it's kind of nice like that. Cause like when I first started my transition, like every trans person, you go like super the opposite direction of what you were. So I went like super feminine and, you know, did all the makeup and all that sort of stuff. And then realized I'm like, well,
did you like that part of it? Did you like the makeup? Cause I got to tell you something, Zoe, Zoe Carey joins us, a trans woman who worked trans outreach, for the Canadian Mental Health Association, talking about, being trans and transitioning and what it's like and what the life is like prior to. And you said something fascinating to me. You're like, I hoped I wasn't, but I was. Not a struggle that a lot of people like really enjoy in your position in life, you know, where you've got a family and kids and you have to live an honest perspective. You have to be honest because you can't be happy. So I have fucking tons of respect for the trans community in that regard. And for you, especially Zoe, you know, being open enough to talk about it, but you know, you said something earlier, in as much as you dressed like you said, really feminist, was that just like, okay, I'm immersing myself in this. I need to dress in. Did you wear dresses? Did you wear skirts? Did you wear that kind of stuff?
Oh yeah, I did everything. I went the whole nine yards. I went, like I said, just think of like the most feminine person you can think of. And mm-hmm. that's the way I went.
Yeah. And that's my question. Like you got all the hosiery, all that other stuff. It's significantly more work, getting ready when you're a female, like you talk about the makeup. I can't be bothered to actually shave 4 out of 5 days. So, when it comes to putting on makeup and making myself look nice, I can't imagine the uphill battle just in that, trying to figure all that stuff out.
I actually got pretty good at that stuff. It was just more of I enjoy it. I still do like it. Like it's not something, but I just, on a day-to-day basis, I'm still kind of lazy. And like I said, I'll just throw on jeans and t-shirt and go out the door sort of deal. Like I live in a truck now, like we were talking about. So
awesome.
I'm like, I need to, okay. So here's another thing that happens with trans women. You start taking hormones, you still get facial hair. You have to have it removed in some way. If you don't have the money, then you're stuck shaving every day. Well, even for me at this point in time, like being able to shave every day is kind of a luxury. So thank God for masks right now, because I am actually very self-conscious about my facial hair and stuff like that. So thank God for the masks and things like that, because it kind of hides it. Like mm-hmm. going to places and not, feel super uncomfortable.
I don't even think about that part of being trans, the facial hair. There are seemingly little things to everybody else, but they're massive things to you, massive things where, you can, and I find it interesting, because you can be not self-conscious about a full transition, but you're self-conscious about a goatee.
Yeah, basically.
It's awesome. In a constructive way.
Yeah, and it's the same with my voice, too. Like, when I first started transitioning, mm-hmm. I tried changing the pitch. Well, there's a reason why I wasn't the singer in my band, is because I'm not very good with that sort of shit. So, I got called creepy by one of my... I used to own a business doing non-emergency patient transfer back, years ago. And one of my employees, when I was trying to, figure that out, they called me creepy, and ever since then, it's stuck in my head, and I've been like, okay, I'm not going to change my voice. I don't want to have surgery, because they can make it deeper if it gets screwed up in some way.
Are you serious?
So I'm like, I'm just going to live with what I got. So,
yeah, and if you want to go, if you want to go full octave higher or a couple octaves higher, fuck those guys. Get rid of those comparisons. Yeah. Fuck those guys. If that's something that you want to do and it's important to you, much like wearing a mask is today, then fucking do it. Yeah. Like that's the freedom, right? That's where I think people mm-hmm. find that freedom, is being able to drop comparisons or not allow someone else's perspective to creep into their day to control only things they can control. And if you can control it, something you want to do. But I also love the fucking screw you. I'm not going to change for shit. I'm going to keep talking like this for the rest of my life because I'm me and I love
it. Yeah. Hey, you know what? The way I look at it is I have a niece who's got a deeper voice than me and she was born female. So mm-hmm. I'm like, well, fuck it. Everybody has a different, I don't want to say, maybe over exaggerating a little bit if she actually hears this, but there's women out there there's women out there with facial hair. There's women out there with deeper voices. There's women out there, there's women who are born female that look more like a man than I do. And so I just, like I said, a couple years ago, I was having lots of mental issues and things like that. And I just said, you know what? Fuck this. I'm not going to try to... Sorry, I swore there.
Have you listened to me talk for the last 25 minutes?
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah. So like I said, fuck this. I'm just going to do what I want, feel happy the way and comfortable in my own skin. And it's been, like night and day difference for me. And, I don't take any... antidepressants anymore. I don't take any of that, and I'm just about, the only thing I take is hormones, every day mm-hmm. and that's it. Mm-hmm. And I've never been happier. And, also I've never been, one in a job to like doing the same monotonous things every day. So I find working also helps too, because I get to see different things every day. So
Yeah, for sure.
That's a big deal for me.
Being a trucker and being transgendered, are there strength in numbers in that community, in the trucker community, or is it tough?
Oh yeah, honestly, I think I've met one other trans trucker, and then like a couple. I also do like YouTube videos as well. I'm not plugging it or anything like that, but I'm just saying, like, so I've met a few people through that.
Mm-hmm.
But
you can plug it, Zoe.
Yeah, well, the plugging my whole 460 followers that I have on my.
That's how you grow. That's how you grow, sister. That's what you do. You gotta fucking put it out there. So tell us where it is.
It's just Zoe Ivy Carey on YouTube. It's really easy to find.
Okay.
I just started doing the Tranny Trucker series on it because.
Now, can I ask you a question? Are we allowed to call it the Tranny Trucker series, or should we call it, like, if we're not transgender, can we call it the Transgendered Trucker series, or are we allowed to, you know, use your vernacular?
Well, when it's directed towards me, I don't care. When it comes to that word, some people hate it. Some people don't give a shit.
Why do people hate it? I understand why they hate it, because it sounds rough to me now, like the way that we are.
It does sound rough. I agree with that, but it was always used as like a negative term.
Mm-hmm.
And now, like, I can differentiate people using that in a negative way towards me from people, you know, like, for instance, my friends. Like, if one of my friends came up to me and been like, you know, hey, Tranny, what's up? Or just something stupid like that in a joking way, like, I wouldn't care. It wouldn't bother me. But mm-hmm. if some guy driving down the street was, like, yelling it in a profane way because they saw me, then it would piss me off. But mm-hmm. it's just, it's all in, you know, how it's
tone
used. And
context, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those, it's a context thing. So, like, if you can say that directed towards me, but don't say it towards, like, another trans person unless they specifically say it.
No offense. Yeah, we'll have you back on the show probably because I'm really enjoying this, but I'm not ever going to introduce you as that, just so you know.
No, that's fine.
I just don't. I would feel uncomfortable dropping the T word, if you will, because
that's totally fine.
And you know why? I'll tell you why. Normally, I would say 5 to 10 years ago, I would have said, fuck you, everybody. I'm allowed to use whatever word I want. They're just words. But I never realized. Yeah. How much those words hurt. They're like fucking big logs that we take and throw in the path of these beautiful human beings who are just on a journey. And mm-hmm. and the reason why it was important for me to hear you say those words earlier, that you hoped you weren't kind of bringing it back to what we talked about and the internal struggle that's caused by people who feel like they're in the wrong set of skin. That's kind of what I've arrived at. It's like, you know, transgendered individuals feel as if God put them in the wrong body. And as someone who grew up with a certain, you know, rule book in the evangelical church, which is fucked. I feel like
on churches.
Oh dude, I hate them all. Organized religion can lick my balls. But the understanding that I have of the internal struggle when it comes to finding out really who you are and what you believe. Translates into who you are and what you believe individually, right? But I kind of draw the line at people that identify as black who aren't. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, obviously. Yeah.
Like I can't imagine the struggle. And I talked to this guy who's transgendered a few years ago, who transitioned at the age of 70, full transition at the age of 70. Listening to the work involved in that full transition, at the age of 70, a grandfather who had a comfortable life, who was retired, who lived alone because his wife passed away, and he just had to do it. And listening to him tell me the story about how he feels at 73, fully transitioned into a female, as opposed to how he felt at the age of 70, hiding behind this thing that he knew he wasn't. He knew deep down he wasn't. The internal struggle was very fucking real. It is no different than anybody who's, because in the end, it comes down to how it affects your mental health, right? You talked about how you weren't in a great place a couple of years ago. The mental health of an individual mm-hmm. is a direct result of an unmet expectation from your life or the lives of others around you. And so when you don't meet these expectations, like, okay, I'm fucking born with a wiener and I don't want it and I got to figure this shit out. Like, you know, like that is dysmorphia that a straight individual could never understand. So when people shit on it, it makes me sad.
Yeah, same here. I get a little, we were talking a little bit earlier, and you're saying how, like, you know, for yourself, you're a very angry guy, and things like that. And so was I. And that was the thing for me. Like, I knew partially actually transitioning was kind of my hope to even try to save my marriage, because it was on a bad trajectory as it was because of my anger issues. Mm-hmm. But the anger issues that I discovered were because I was trans and hiding it. So it was like, yeah, like, you understand what I'm saying? Like, I'm kind of
100%.
Yeah.
100%. It's this fucking rage that lives inside of people that they can't qualify and they can't straighten out. Mm-hmm. And to the point where not being able to straighten out this thing that's intrinsic inside of you, it's as fucking normal as breathing, but you've had to deny it and you've had to lie. Mm-hmm. And everybody knows how dangerous lies are. And when you understand the facts involved behind, you know, human being who's trying to live a happy life. And that's really what it comes down to. People can point to sexuality and identification and the process involved in how people identify and what they feel like they are. But really that has very little to do with it. It has, okay, fuck, this person, Zoe Carey, who, what was your name prior to transitioning?
I used to go by Ryan.
Ryan. So back in the day, this individual Ryan isn't Ryan. This isn't Ryan. This is Zoe. I'm in here and I want to get the fuck out. To the point where you have life-changing surgery. The idea of cutting off my genitals doesn't sit well with me on the best of days. Being willing to do it so you can be happy. And I'm being serious.
Yeah.
Being willing to do it so you can be happy is heroic to me in some regard.
I don't like to use that term, the heroic thing. It was just, like I said, it was just something I needed to do for myself. Mm-hmm. Technically I didn't cut them off. They're still mostly there.
How does it work? How does that work?
Literally it's just taking your Audi and turning it into an innie. There's actually good video on the internet, of the actual surgery. There's two different ones. There's
of like your surgery?
Not mine in particular. Mm-hmm. I didn't bother with that because there's already those videos out there, but there's a like an animated style one. So if you don't want to see all the blood and everything like that, it's not an actual cartoon, but it's like, you know, like computer animated or whatever.
Yeah.
Of how they do it.
CGI.
And then there's the actual one, like on a person where you see blood and everything like that. So like it's really interesting. They literally throw away your testicles and that's about it.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any pre-op paranoia or like going, because that's like point of no return shit for everybody, right? When they throw your nuts out.
No paranoia. I was worried it was just, you know, my luck. It would go bad. Like there are, you know, situations where it's gone bad. But mm-hmm. I went to one of the best surgeons in the world, mm-hmm. So I wasn't too concerned. Which is in Canada, actually, it's in Montreal. Mm-hmm. So like I really had no complications after surgery. I barely took any, medications after surgery. I think by the second or third day, all I was taking was acetaminophen. Mm. But I actually had both done. I had boobs and bush done. So
you went the full boobs and bush in one shot.
Yep. Actually, the government of Ontario paid for it. So
congratulations.
Like, you know what?
One good turn deserves another. So did you go big with the Hooters, Zoe, can I ask?
Well, I'm a fairly large person, so I went with like a D size, so mm-hmm. it's like just they do them to fit your body of thing. So
you can't request, when you go in there, let's say you're going, this is a completely innocently ignorant question, but can you make like requests when you go in, depending on from what to what you're transitioning or who you're transitioning?
Well, because I wasn't paying for the boobs, like they're kind of instructed to just do what suits your body. Okay. I'm sure you could go a little bit bigger or smaller if you really wanted to. Like if you're like, hey, doc, you know, give me a few extra CCs in there.
Yep.
But you know, like I said, the surgeons in Montreal at GRS Montreal, they're awesome. They literally are the ones who are rewriting the books on it, and like, yeah, they're just amazing. And they'll literally, he'll look at you and be like, yeah, I think you need this amount of CCs, and you know, it's pretty good. Like, I'm quite happy with what I've got. So
that's all that matters. But, again, getting back to what fucking matters, right? You know,
I
these are just silly questions that are probably in the ethosphere or in the atmosphere of the world of stupid. But I have to ask these questions because I don't know, right? Like, you know, it's the same thing with the menstruation thing. Like, what was all the hubbub about, you know, and you've explained that, terrifically, but you know, it's such a, like you'd say, go watch those videos, Dean, or hey, everybody can go watch those videos. I'm not a queasy guy, but those are one of the videos like operating in that area that I probably would have a hard time with. And that's just me.
My ex-wife can attest to this. The first time I watched that video, we were actually on our way back from Florida.
Yeah.
It was just as I had started. Like, I literally, we left the day we left for Florida. It was kind of like our last big family vacation or whatever. We drove down with the trailer and stayed at Disneyland or Disney World. But on the way back, we were sitting, I had a couple drinks. We were sitting there having a couple drinks or whatever. And I started watching that video and I almost threw up. So it's not just you that goes queasy. Like, I watched it a few more times and was, because I felt like if I was going to have that surgery, I needed to know what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm just going to sit and watch it. And, it's actually really interesting. Like, how they managed to like save everything. And like, I can still, you know, have, you know, climaxes and things like that. I guess I'm trying to be as, you know, nice as possible here, but, so like everything still works down there. Like, I can have penetrative sex if I want to, sort of deal. Like, it works almost the same. But I will say, when it comes to that whole menstruation thing, I don't want to count anybody out. So there are the people out there. I know one in particular that are born with both sets of genitalia, and it is possible for them if they decide to go to the female side. You know, it could be a possibility that they have it, but it's such a small number of people in the world that the average trans female, you know, you're not peeing blood. There's nothing, like, it's not the same. Like, you know, if you're a post-op and you have issues down, like, you can have, you know, after surgery issues and have blood come out, like that happens, but it's not menstrual blood.
Okay.
So when I heard that, I'm like, what the? Who the hell says
dude,
that? Like,
J.K. Rowling, the author of the Harry Potter series, maybe one of the greatest literary minds of our time, said, you hate her? You don't like her?
She's what, I don't know, have you ever heard the term trans exclusionary radical feminist? Or
no, explain it to me.
Basically, they're people that identify themselves as being feminist, but they only, so like, they don't include trans women as being female. They see us as men.
Wrong.
They see trans men who have transitioned from female to male as women. So they, she's written a lot of, like, I was never a big Harry Potter fan, so I've just kind of picked up snippets here and there from people, like on Facebook and shit.
Mm-hmm.
But, from what I understand, she was like saying very negative trans, like making very negative remarks about trans people and spreading misinformation about them. And that's where my issue comes in. It's the same with Joe Rogan. Every time he ever speaks about a trans person, especially when it comes to kids, he just spreads misinformation constantly.
I'm not familiar with what he says. What does he say?
Like, he says, like, well, about the trans women in sports.
Mm-hmm.
How he's just like, oh, if we let them in, they're going to take over, you know, all female sports, which is not even remotely close to that happening. There's trans women in sports, and none of them really are that, like, they're not, you know, high elite level.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them, they're not winning everything. It's not happening. Even Fallon Fox, who I kind of met I'm like Facebook friends with her. So like I talked to her a few times or whatever, just because we're part of the same group or whatever. And we have similar friends as well. Even like she was a US, like an MMA style fighter who started fighting after she had transitioned, like years after she had transitioned. And even she's not undefeated. She's been beat by women. So there's that issue. And then when it comes to the kids, where he makes it sound like, you know, hypothetically, Dean, I know you have kids. So say tomorrow, one of your kids comes to you and says, hey, I think I might be a woman. You can't go the next day to the doctor and just immediately start injecting them with hormones. That's not how it works. What they do is if they're under a certain age, I can't remember if it's 16 or 18. It's been a couple of years since I used to do the, I'm not with, Canadian Mental Health anymore. I don't do that anymore. I just don't have the time. It's been a few years since I did it. So I can't remember the exact numbers, but.
Sorry. I'm just going to say all around, wonderful woman, Zoe Carey, who loves to enlighten people. That's what we should have put on your placeholder here on the screen.
Yeah. Hey, whatever. It doesn't matter. But, the big thing with that is with kids is they don't get hormones until they know for 100% certain, and the doctors that are treating them know 100% certain that that is the way they want to go. Like you have to go through years of doctor's appointments, seeing like mental health professionals, things like that, before you like a child or you know. A preteen or whatever.
That's a fucked up narrative too, right? Like it's weird because they want like if a like say a 16-year-old says, "Mom, I want to come out as transgender." Dad, they rush them to a mental health professional.
It's ingrained in our system. Like that's why like when I worked doing the mental like the outreach, it was through Canadian Mental Health, but it was like called Gender Journeys, and it was just, unfortunately, those were the people that started, you know, trying to help these individuals to make sure that they were of, in the worst possible terms of saying it, in sane mind, and this is what they wanted to do sort of thing. So, for instance, like, say, like I was saying with kids, if you're 10 and you think, you know, you go to your parents and there's like a history of this child obviously being uncomfortable in their body and things like that. Then the parents will take them to the doctor, and at most they will get hormone blockers so that when they start going through puberty, they just don't start going through puberty. And if later on in life they decide that they don't want to do this, they can remove the hormone blockers, and then they will just have their normal puberty just a little bit later in life. So medically it doesn't affect them, but the thing is with those kids, it is such a minute amount of them to the point where I don't even think there's too many numbers on it. Again, I could be wrong. If somebody can inform me now, like I said, it's been a few years.
I can inform you right now. So we'll just go with that generalization and I'm fine with it. So,
yeah. Say 99.9% of the children that do go down this route, they continue on that journey because, you know, there's a difference between a child saying, I want to be a girl today, I want to be a boy today, and, you know, going through years and years and years of mental anguish of being in the wrong body. Like, look at somebody like, for instance, Jazz Jennings in the U.S. She went, you know, since she was 3 with having these issues, and, you know, even as she's gotten older, she never changed her mind. It never wavered.
And that's the girl from This Is Jazz or whatever that show.
Yeah, I used to watch that show back in the day, but
yeah, I've watched a few episodes of it just from a perspective of trying to understand it, you know, years ago, and that's where I thought no one would pick that life if they could, right? If they had a choice,
yeah, no,
and I don't mean to sound like a dick.
If I had the choice, I wouldn't. What's that? Sorry, go ahead.
No, I didn't mean to sound like an asshole by saying that.
No, and that's the thing. Like, I would never choose this life. I wouldn't wish this on my, you know, worst enemy. But it's, you know, it's literally I, you know, go down the same path as my father and kill myself and leave my child without a parent. I was his father, but like without that other parent, or I go down this route and be happier in my life sort of deal. So yes, it's made things, you know, a lot more difficult. But not as difficult as, you know, hanging myself or whatever sort mm-hmm. of thing. So like, it's just the better of the two situations, I guess is the best way to describe it.
Yeah. For those of you that think that, being transgendered is a choice or a defect, for those of you who think that, the LGBT community has a choice in how they feel and what comes out of who they are. I hope you listen to Zoe. I hope you absolutely listen to every word she said, especially towards the end. It's not a choice. These are people and individuals and human beings that deserve our compassion, our love and understanding, so that they don't kill themselves, so that they don't end up a statistic, so that we can embrace these people as individuals and human beings who are struggling. So I appreciate the enlightenment and more importantly, I appreciate the honesty as well. And I can't wait to meet you, Zoe. I'd hang out with you any day of the week. I don't care what's on your chest or between your legs or lack thereof. You're a great human being and, very well spoken, and you represent the transgender community very well. And I'm enlightened and I appreciate your time more than anything.
Yeah. Thanks for listening. Like I said, I've listened to you for a long time. And honestly, like I remember back in the day how you were and things like that. And it was really nice to hear you start like your kind of change in attitude, like you've said in the past. Like it's nice to hear that because that's what people need to do. And, you know, the more it's talked about, the more open it is and, you know, the better everybody is. But I was a little disappointed though that Darren wasn't on today. I was kind of hoping to talk to him.
Yeah, too, we were too, but he was late for yesterday's podcast and probably didn't even look at his email today. He's a fucking rock star, Zoe. He still acts like a rock star.
I know. I love him. Hey, I was a kid when Goldfinger was big, so I was just like, man, I love that band and even like his other projects, like the Palettes and stuff like that. Yeah. So I used to be in a punk band, so
Dude, we're gonna have you back. Sorry, Zoe, we're gonna have you back on the podcast. Listen, I've called you dude 3 times and it's only because of the audio. If I saw a video of you, because I just have a picture of you in a fucking kick-ass motorcycle helmet riding a bike, so that's the only picture, because that's what everybody's seeing. So I humbly apologize for that. This is going to require some work just on my audio portion, just of me saying, you know what, Zoe is a lovely young lady and someone who I aspire to be as comfortable and as open with. So I appreciate you doing this. And listen, when you talk about how I used to feel, I always felt like this. I always felt like advocacy should have been more part of my personality. Advocating for the unfair, advocating for things that, that other people fucking struggle through, but I never struggled. You know, I always knew I was straight. I never had to question my sexuality in dark, quiet moments. I never had to, I was allowed to come and go as I pleased. And those were jokes. Your community is not a joke. What you go through is not a joke. We can laugh and have fun and tell jokes, about the lighter side of this, but that internal struggle. And after going through some downtime in my life, I've realized that no one's exempt. No one's exempt from sadness. No one's exempt from struggle. No one's exempt. And so if there's a way that I can take some logs off those paths and be able to educate people along the way, and at the same time, you know, be an ally in every capacity from a perspective of education, understanding, and compassion, all I want. That's all I want out of this life, because this is happy to me. You know, this is a happy result. This is a happy conversation. This is an honest conversation about an individual who not a lot of people would have heard your story. And I want to tell these stories because they're important fucking stories to tell of the disenfranchised. Mm-hmm. If we can't do something with what we've been given, and you know what, I was given a lot and I didn't use it properly most of the time. So if I can use this properly some of the time, I'm a pretty happy guy. And so it's my pleasure. So thank you.
Hey, like I said, I'm about just trying to help other people. Like what I'm okay with and what the next trans person you meet with is, you know, is not the same. But But you know what, Zoe?
I think every community has it's like, listen, we old stupid fucking white guys have like terrible examples. Every group has its extremists, right? Like there are extremists in the trans community who you probably fucking hate. There are extremists that are white guys who I fucking hate. They're called racist KKK members, by the way. There are extremists in every sect, denomination, group of individuals. So we'll just shit on those people together.
Yeah, well, the alt center, that's where it's at, man.
Alt middle, baby.
Alt middle, yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah, alt middle.
Sign me up for that shit. That's where I fit. So
Zoe, you and me, we're gonna go a long way. Appreciate your time. Thanks for this, Zoe. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, for sure, man. Have a good one.
All right, Zoe Carey. Trans woman who transitioned from male to female. Sorry, male to female. That's not something that you do on a Sunday for kicks, by the way. It's not like, Sean, that's not like when someone goes, hey, you want to go for wings? Sean Sargent, our producer. I hope people got that out of there. I hope people understood that from Zoe. That is like, Zoe didn't ask for this. Trans people don't ask and beg to go through this unbelievable fucking life.
And some people never actually take the step, right? Like there's people that are hidden their whole life in this community that just haven't taken that step. And so it's really interesting to hear someone that's gone through that phase of making the commitment, making a big change in their whole life. And it affects everything. So,
well, because you've gotten the looks, you know how trans people are looked at by losers. Everybody knows. And so when you make that decision and you know, you can't go back, you just heard Zoe tell his testicles are in the garbage. Her testicles are gone. Garbage. Threw them out. It's not like going to get your hair cut.
No,
it's fucking God, that, and she says she's not a hero, but that's like hero shit to me.
It's impressive. It's super impressive.
It's hero shit to me. You should have sat and listened to this fucking conversation I had with a 73-year-old guy that transitioned when he was 70. Hospital for like a month.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Someone that goes through at 70, like you've gone your whole life.
Yeah, that's the most badass thing anybody could do if you ask me. And I'm being fucking serious.
Yeah.
Yeah, you dick wallopers out there that don't share that opinion, I don't care. That's a badass.
Yeah,
and be proud. I wish I was a tenth of that. Yes,
she seems super proud of herself and how happy she is right now. So she is.
She is. And I fucked up twice. I said, "Dude," like or three times. I said, "Dude," three times, just because I wasn't seeing the person. I was hearing the voice of this individual, and so cool about it too, like an understanding from an individual who's like, I get it. I'm not upset. Because the intention was good.
It's
fucking great. Love that.
Yeah. Alt middle. Do that.
Alt middle, baby. We'll take transgendered people. Bring us your transgendered and your gay. Bring us your straight. Bring us your black. Bring us your white. Bring us your Asian. Come one, come all. If you hate every other extremist as much as we do, plenty of room in the alt middle, baby. Rex Chapman loves it. My boy Rex Chapman on Twitter. Like the biggest Twitter follower in the world. He's pounding some of my tweets yesterday about the alt middle. I'm like, this thing's catching on. I'm going to make shirts. Jesse Lumsden sent me an email yesterday. Hey, Canadian bobsled legend, Canadian football legend Jesse Lumsden sends me a text. He's like, well, I'll read it to you. I'm all about the alt middle. Let's get shirts. I'm bringing it.
Well, you never know. Merch is coming soon. That's one thing we'll... maybe we should just announce that right now, that we're going to be coming out with some merch on our Twitch channel specifically. Anybody that wants to subscribe on Twitch.
When were we doing that? I wasn't aware of that. No one told me about that.
This is the extra little stuff, you know, the reason we do Twitch.
Okay, good. So Twitch, yes. Join us on Twitch, yeah. Dean Blundell TV.
Stuff on Twitch. Come join us, guys.
Twitch.tv/DeanBlundellTV. Thanks to our friends at Ownersbox Fantasy Sports, the premier weekly fantasy sports platform on the planet. Right now, they're giving you $500 just for fun. I can't believe that, to be honest with you. We started doing like these $50 cash bonuses. So you put in $50 of your cash to gamble, to play responsibly, fantasy sports, football specifically, because it's all we got. They got hockey. They got everything coming. I mean, ramping up, ramping. But join Owner's Box right now. Make football fun again, for crying out loud. And it's a no-brainer. When they start at 50 and go to 500, you got to take advantage of it. You put in up to 500, they'll match that with a deposit match of $500. So you put in five, you start with 1,000. I'm no math genius, but if it's free, it's for me. So do it. Owner's Box, weekly fantasy sports. Get your head in it, for crying out loud. Ownersbox.com. Go sign up. It's like 30 seconds. Totally free to sign up, too. Doesn't cost a dime. Blue Microphones, the official microphone of the DeanBlundell.com podcast network. Here at DeanBlundell.com, we take our audio seriously, and so we have to partner with the best. Blue Microphones, at Blue Microphones on Twitter. Dream a dream and put it all together with Blue. They got these Compass mic arms. They've got two sets of headphones. Fucking Emmy award-winning. Unbelievable. Love them. Can't stop using them. I use them for everything. Shut people out. Bring people in. Nice and thick, noise canceling too, a little bit. I love it. Anyway, thanks to our friends at Blue, because not only are you the best podcast broadcast gear company on the planet, they're also rewarding you for having a podcast. If you go to DeanBlundell.com right now, sign up for the Show Us Your Pod contest. We'll just pick your podcast. Could be yours. Could be you that we pick to join the DeanBlundell.com network. No great shake, you say? Screw that. Going to give you a whole bunch of shit, too, including a bunch of Blue microphone stuff, including this Blue Yeti X microphone, including these headphones and a Compass mic arm. Oh, you got to podcast properly if you're going to join the DeanBlundell.com network. That's what I hear. That's what I've been told. Blue microphones. Thank you. Ed's Gitch. Buy three, get one free. That's how he does it. Loves giving away free stuff, too. All this free stuff around me. All over on this page, down there, over there, up there, over there. If you order right now from edsfineimports.com, his Gitch, his own branded underwear, pouch in the front, boxer brief, super breathable, the most comfortable underwear on the planet, luxury Gitch. Send them to you for Christmas. Send them to you way before Christmas. Plus, he'll give you one pair for free when you buy three with promo code Gitch, and then the number three at edsfineimports.com. That's it for us. Sign up on the newsletter at deanblundell.com. Other than that, I don't know. I'm going to take the weekend. It's Friday. Well, it's not Friday now, it's Thursday, but I have no plans to podcast tomorrow, and you shouldn't either. They don't do well on Fridays, that's why. It's an analytics thing. Plus, we'll just pull a whole bunch of shit out of this podcast, throw it all over the place. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. See you Monday.